day has come at last. The sail strained at the mast. The years have quickly passed away. Goodbye to all my friends.
More of Lake Effect now. I'm Mitch Tyke. There is a great tradition in this country and in the world of trying to affect social change through the arts. Music is considered especially effective because it often engages both the artist and the audience, which can sing along in the way someone viewing a painting cannot. Folk traditions around the world have a way of speaking truth to power, whether overtly or subversively, and in this country, singers like Woody Guthrie, Pete Seeger, and Joan Baez exemplify that tradition. In the UK, centuries of protest are encoded in song. Over the past 30 years, one of the enduring voices of protest to emerge from Britain has been singer-songwriter Billy Bragg. In turns angry, reflective, and funny, Bragg has developed a following in the US as well. But his songs don't just reflect his activism. He sings about things like love and relationships, too. Bragg will be in Milwaukee tomorrow night in support of his latest album, Tooth and Nail, which does have a more reflective feel. Bragg recently blogged that, quote, "The notion you can change the world by singing songs can only serve to undermine activism." Lake Effect's Bonnie North wondered if art was really that ineffectual.
No, it's not ineffectual, but its role is not the actual agent of change. It has an important role in reflecting the world, offering you a different perspective, at a gig maybe bringing you together and recharging your solidarity batteries, you know, when you sing the songs together and you see there are people in your town who care about these issues. But ultimately, you know, I'll be in another city the next day. You'll still be there to deal with the problems that you face in your town. And ultimately, I think I would be shortchanging people if I suggested that I could change the world. I feel the responsibility should be reflected onto the audience. If they want to change the world, that is their responsibility. My job is to articulate that and focus that.
And maybe to be a catalyst?
A catalyst of some sort, yeah, but not the agent itself. You know, I think that idea from the 1960s that if we all sang these songs together, the world will change wasn't naive. It was just that came from the fact that music was the only social medium available to people back then. So everything went through music, the focus of music. You know, you defined yourself by the bands and the artists that you listened to. So it took on an importance that was beyond its ability to effect cultural change, which music can do. People like Elvis Presley bringing black and white audiences together is in a segregated culture like the United States of America was in the 50s and 60s. That's bringing about change, but the actual political change, actual generational change, that takes a little bit more organization in my experience.
Do you think it takes more will that, you know, that you don't get from the feel-goodness of being with people who share your ideas about how the world should be?
Yeah, I mean, that's what you get if you put on a gig. I mean, the first political gig I ever went to was against racism. And, you know, at the time, I was working in an office where the language the men used there was casually racist, it was sexist, it was homophobic. But I never said anything because I was the office junior. I was only 19. And when I went to Rock Against Racism, there were like 100,000 kids just like me. And I realized that day that my generation would actually define themselves in opposition to discrimination of all kinds. That was going to be our, like, you know, the previous generation had struggled against the Vietnam War. We were going to stand against discrimination. So when I went back to work on Monday morning, I made an effort to stand up for what I believed in and challenge these guys. Now, it wasn't the bands at that event that gave me the courage of my convictions. It was being in that audience and realizing I was not alone, that I was in a majority in my generation, even if I was in a minority at work. So I know from personal experience that happens. And my aim is to try and be that transformational change at gigs myself for people.
Has your sense of what is activism and how it affects your life and how you think about activism changed as you've gotten older?
I think everything's changed with the end of the Cold War and the collapse of the Soviet Union and the sort of move into what we're now in as a post-ideological politics. You know, you have to step back a little bit and think about what is best to do rather than remain wedded to a formula that was developed in the 20th century based around some writings that a German guy did in the 19th century. Put that down into actual practical terms. I think the issue that I find myself speaking most strongly about these days is the idea of accountability. Not just how do you hold politicians to account, which sometimes can be difficult, but how do you hold capitalism to account? account? How do you hold the bankers to account after what they did? How do you hold the newspaper proprietors to account, the trouble we're having in the United Kingdom with the phone hacking scandal? These issues are the sort of at the top of my list for trying to articulate and put across to the audiences every night.
Do you ever feel that sometimes you keep fighting the same battles over and over, that it never ends?
It's a struggle, isn't it? That's why it's called a struggle. If it was easy and you could just do it, like making a sideboard, you know, although that can be a struggle as well. I mean, it's no real different from a relationship. You know, I write about the struggle to change the world, but I also write about the struggles to maintain a long-term relationship. It's an ongoing thing, isn't it? You don't win or lose in a long-term relationship. You carry on and build and take each day as it comes. I think you have to be the same with politics. Not getting there that's important. It's moving in that general direction that's important.
You talk about personal relationships, and there's a song on the new album, Handyman Blues, where one of the lyrics caught me, and I really, really liked it, which was, I have to find a way to make my poetry build a roof over our heads.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, for those of us who aren't practically talented, you know, able to build that sideboard that we were talking about, you know, those of us who are talented in different ways, you know, it's a kind of celebration of that, really, you know, and talking to you here from Nashville, Tennessee, where, you know, people are trying to make a living writing songs. It seems a very, you know, germane song to be singing here.
I'm never gonna be the handyman around the house my father wants. So don't be asking me to hang a curtain rail for you, because screwdriver business just gets me confused. It takes me half an hour to change a fuse. And when I flick the switch, the light's all blue. I'm not your handyman. Don't be expecting me to put up shelves or build a garden shed. But I can write a song that tells the world how much I love you instead. I'm not any good at pottery, so let's lose a T and just shift back the E, and I'll find a way to make my poetry build a roof over our heads.
Also on Tooth and Nail, the Woody Guthrie cover is just lovely.
I ain't got no home, yeah.
Yeah.
I ain't got no home world anymore, yeah. Well, I started playing that again because it seemed to be like a song that reflected our times. You know, when people talk about the issues that Woody mentions in that song, people losing their jobs, losing their homes to the bank, rich people making huge amounts of money on the stock market while ordinary working people struggle to make ends meet, people dying for want of proper health care. You know, that's clearly the debates that are going on at the moment about how to provide proper health care for citizens of the United States of America. This song could have been written any time in the last 5 years, but actually it's over 70 years old. So wanting to, as always, to connect with Woody, that seemed to be a good song to be recording right now.
Yeah, and somehow it's so depressing that it's 70 years old and it's still so relevant.
Music can't change the world, I'm afraid, as we touched on earlier. There's the proof for you. You know, the role that we have is to hold up a mirror and to reflect and to encourage and to try and focus with that mirror, to try and focus people's anger into solidarity.
I ain't got no home, I'm just a roaming round, just a wandering worker. I go from town to town, and the police make it hard for me no matter where I go. And I ain't got no home in this world anymore. No, I ain't got no home in this world anymore. My brothers and my sisters are stranded on this road, a long and dusty road that a million trod. Now the rich man took my home and drove me from my door. got no home in this world anymore. No, I ain't got no home in this world anymore.
Well, there are traditions of that in both the UK and in America. I mean, Woody Guthrie, Pete Seeger here, yourself and other folks in the UK. What are some of the differences between the two traditions?
Well, for me, the main difference between me and Pete Seeger is I don't think Pete Seeger ever saw the Clash. I mean, he might have done, but I've spoke to him a couple of times. He didn't seem like a bloke who was down the front in 1977. I mean, that's, you know, it's a different approach. Same, getting to the same place. Because I think, you know, Joe Strummer was hugely influenced by Woody Guthrie. You know, that's why the band painted slogans on their guitars, because Woody painted on his guitar, "This machine kills fascists." So, you know, there is a connection between what Pete was doing and what I'm doing that does flow through the Clash. It flows through many other things as well, but there is that aspect. So I think the urgency that came from punk rock, as well as the idea that anyone can step up and play. I think Woody would have been familiar with that. It wouldn't have been something that surprised him at all.
No, I don't think so either. I was also thinking of, sort of in modern day protest, what some of the differences you see between the two countries. Are people approaching using music in a different way, or is it pretty much the same?
Well, I think things have changed since the 1960s. When music hit its high peak as a social medium, as a way of communicating with our peers and with our parents' generation. I think there are other ways now to take part in the debate. The internet offers a number of different media. You know, you can blog, you can make a film and put it on YouTube, you can start a Facebook page, you can campaign on Twitter. And all these things are ways of helping people to engage. And for me, when I was 19, the only way I could do that was to write songs, do gigs and play guitar. So I don't think that music still has that front line ability. It's not the only way that we communicate anymore, but it's still very viable. It's still, particularly in if you're wanting to get people to understand that the fight that we're fighting today, you know, this isn't a new thing. We're not the first people ever to be involved in this struggle, whether it's for fair pay, for better healthcare, against discrimination. Music has a way of connecting you with those people who struggled before and letting you see how the progress that they made, the connections that they made back then. And I think these things are important in helping you to find a way now, you know, when you realize you're not alone in doing this. Music has a really great power in doing that.
Yeah, I think it does too. And speaking of music and the new album, I mean, it was out in the spring, but it has a very distinctly American sort of alt-country and roots feel to it. And the other thing that really struck me is how reflective it is, and even rueful in places. And I was wondering if this is a gentler Billy Bragg.
It's a more reflective Billy Bragg, yeah, most certainly, yeah. I mean, I was in quite a reflective mood at the time. It was recorded the year after my mum passed away, and although it's not about that, it became the thing that I used to move on. You know, I needed to do something to get back on and move on with my life, and the album became that thing. But also, you know, the angry songs that I've written in the last 5 years, thanks to the internet, I can make them available immediately. So I've made 5 or 6 songs available for free download about subjects like the Clash, the phone hacking scandal, the death of Rachel Corrie. You know, these songs, I in the old days, I would have to wait until I made an album in order to get that idea out there. I wrote a song called "There's Power in a Union" during the miners' strike in 1984. It didn't turn up on an album until 1986,
right,
because of the nature of the business then. Now you can just make these things available. And then the end result of that is, if you've knocked out all your topical songs, when you come to make an album, you're bound to have songs that deal with that other struggle we were talking about, the struggle to maintain long-term relationships. And so, yeah, the album is, I think, bound to be more reflective. And the way it was made as well, you know, all in 5 days, it has a certain mood to it. I'm not sure rueful is what I was aiming for. Reflective, perhaps, but not world-weary. You know, still engaged, I think, and still encouraging, I hope.
Still active.
Of course, yeah. Because ultimately activism is the only antidote to cynicism. And we're all prone to cynicism. We all have those days when we think, what's the point? As far as I know, there is only one antidote to that, and that is to get off your butt and engage.
So you're optimistic that the world...
I have to be optimistic. I'm a socialist. I believe that if the majority of the people we're involved in making decisions, the world will be a better place. If you're not an optimist, it's very hard to be. I think it's very hard to be a socialist if you don't feel optimistic about things. If you don't believe in people, if you don't believe in humanity. Woody Guthrie believed in humanity. You know, that was a great lesson I learned from working with his archive.
And the other thing, too, of course, it would be hard to go out every night and perform the songs if you weren't optimistic and hopeful.
Exactly. Yeah, of course. And I see reasons to be hopeful. I mean, I travel around your country, and we all know the stereotype of the, you know, the reactionary right-wing American and all that kind of stuff. And you end up in Washington State doing a gig in Seattle, and I have a song called Sexuality, which is about sexual equality. And people tell you after the show that they, at their most recent election last year, they voted in favor of not only equal marriage, but also legalization of marijuana. And you suddenly realize there are places more in the United States that are more progressive than where you come from in Europe. Bit of a shock. So, yeah, I see reasons to be optimistic.
And speaking of the music, what are we going to hear? A mix of old and new when you play tomorrow night?
A mix of old and new. Yeah, I've got a band with me that is based around the sound of Tooth and Nail, but that allows me to play some of the old Billy Bragg songs in a new way and give them a more sympathetic hearing. And also, obviously, the songs from Mermaid Avenue, which are really conducive to that sound.
Well, I'm very much looking forward to it. I saw you the last time you were here, and really looking forward to hearing you again.
Well, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to it as well.
Thanks so much for talking with us today.
My pleasure.
To the misanthropic, misbegotten merchants of gloom, who look into their crystal balls and prophesy our doom, let the death knell chime, it's the end of time. Let the cynics put their blinkers on and toast our decline. Don't become demoralized by this chorus complaint, it's a sure sign that the old world is terminally quaint. And tomorrow's gonna be a better day, no matter what the siren voices say. Tomorrow's gonna be a better day.
Billy Bragg's most recent CD is this year's Tooth and Nail. We're hearing the track Tomorrow's Gonna Be a Better Day. He'll play tomorrow night at Turner Hall Ballroom. He spoke with Bonnie North by phone from Nashville. That's Monday's edition of Lake Effect. Tomorrow on the show, details about a remarkable collaboration between academic institutions here, Marquette University and MIAD. I'm Mitch Teich. Thank you so much for being with us today, and I sure hope you'll tune in again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. We're NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. It's 11 o'clock and fresh air is next.
To the pessimistic populists who harbor no doubt that every day we make our way to hell in a handcart, and the snarky said who's snapping to get anyone who sticks their head above the parapet. Oh, don't be disheartened, baby, don't be fooled. Take it from someone who knows the glass is half full, and tomorrow's gonna be a better day, no matter what the siren voices say. Tomorrow's gonna be a better day.